As you did it to one of the least of these, says Jesus, you did it to me. At first glance, this gospel story seems like another sorting story. Like children on the playground, we pick teams. I read an article this week by Jill Dufford, and she said, like children on the playground, we pick teams. The sorting has been part of the human experience for a long, long, long time, she says. Think about it for just a minute. Before there were nations, there were tribes. There were still different languages, distinct cultural practices, varied roles within the groups. Many of those came about so that they could keep people in their lane, if you will. Couldn't help but thinking about Harry Potter and the famed sorting hat. You remember when the children first came to school, they had to stand up front and sit down in a chair, and the sorting hat was put on top of their heads, and it would call out Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, or Slytherin. A place for everyone and everyone in their place. It would seem to make life neater and more manageable. No need to worry about or get to know someone, because all we need to know about those Slytherin people anyway, we know already, right? It's tempting to think that we know all we need to know about the neighbor with a political yard sign that's opposite ours. We're tempting to think that we know all we need to know about those who listen to the radio show that we can't stand or the newscast that we don't like. It's tempting to think that we know all we need to know about people from that town or that country. Tempting to think we know all we need to know about people of that religion or maybe even that denomination. We've got it all. We've got them all sorted out. It seems neater. Less stress, no need to worry about being challenged or changed or encountering somebody different than ourselves or being made uncomfortable. Jill Duffield, in her book, she mentions a book that's called The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. I haven't personally read the book, but it seems rather obvious to me at this point in time that while we might prefer our own sordid lives, something important is missing in our siloed culture. Now, to be honest, Jesus at places, the Bible in places, talks about sorting. Wheat and chaff, wheat and weeds, good fruit and bad fruit, sheep and goats. But this story today also makes clear that God does not sort like we do. We choose our neighborhoods, our churches, our schools, where people look like us, mostly act like us, don't necessarily call into question our values or choices by their presence and their perspective, but God does not sort like we do. And the question that these texts bring to us, force us to deal with on this particular Sunday, is this: whether we are living under Jesus' reign and his commands, or our own. Who's doing the sorting, God or us? What criterion are we using to pick teams, God's or our own? Dale Bruner goes on in his commentary on Matthew to say that this is the last teaching of Jesus in Matthew's gospel. Matthew seems to want to imprint this story on the minds of his readers where you just can't quite forget it. Why would he want to do that? Remember now that Matthew was a tax collector first, which meant that he was already unqualified, sorted out by the religious people of his day, and yet Jesus makes him a disciple. What is going on? I think Matthew wants us to see, we could put it in a way that we did last week, that God's ways are not our ways, but they could be. So what's the criteria for sorting that Jesus uses in this story? People are put on the right or the left. They are named sheep or goats based on whether or not they welcomed the Son of Man. Interesting title that Jesus uses at the very beginning, Son of Man, but make no mistake, Christ is King. The rest of the story talks about them responding to the King. It's interesting to me that neither the sheep nor the goats were aware of when they had done this or not done this, when they had fed Jesus, when they had given him a drink, when they had welcomed him, when they had clothed or visited the sick. And so Jesus makes it really clear and repeats it over again. When you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. It's not really our way, is it? This is not based on values or morals or economics or politics or the kind of liturgy that we'd prefer in our churches or our denomination we are in. It doesn't even insist upon a statement of belief. And the rub, of course, is that the least of these are often the ones that we sort out. Has it ever happened to you where you discovered something much more to a person than you initially saw or thought about them? This is not an especially hard one that I thought of, but it was formative for me nonetheless. When I moved into college, one of the people that was in the room right next to me was a guy named Mark Medina. He later on became a roommate of mine, but we were freshmen and we just lived right next door to each other, and he had three strikes against him right from the beginning in my mind. I'm rather ashamed to say this, but this is the truth. So first of all, he was Catholic. I had grown up in a church and a family that actually had lots of questions about whether Catholics were actually Christians. You know, they prayed to Mary and they used beads and stuff like that that were really suspect in my house. So that was strike one. And then he was Hispanic, which I'm also ashamed to say that I was wary of. He's actually a fourth generation Mexican American. And then I played baseball against him. This was the third strike because he hurt me. He played in Los Animas and I played in Trinidad, and I played shortstop. He was a center fielder and he was really fast. I was trying to break up a double play. He slid into second base, caught me with his cleats on my leg, took a big gash. He hurt me. He liked to remind me that I was also trying to complete a double play and was throwing the ball right at his head, but I didn't like to tell that part of the story. But you can tell what happened right off the bat. Mark was one of the most likable people ever, had a huge heart. His first break at college, he went home and he brought back his mother's homemade enchiladas and tortillas, which were unbelievable for all of us. If anybody had a doubt about Mark, he won us over just with his mother's enchiladas and tortillas. But there was so much more to him. So much more. In the end, he is the one that helped me find my way back to the Lord and to the church. Has it ever happened to you? Maybe it was the family that you got to know whose first language is not English. Or maybe the person who voted differently from you, who surprised you in some of the kindness that they offered. Or maybe it was somebody that had a different economic situation or had been through some form of addiction or even a mental illness and you were surprised by what they were doing now. Maybe it was somebody who was in another religion and had questions about our faith, but nonetheless was genuinely trying to seek out some things that were true. Or maybe it's somebody from a different denomination that has a different stance on certain things that we do. Have you ever encountered someone like that? If we do, and if we are willing to engage in a conversation and to get to know them, we might find that we are caused to do one of three things. It may just cause us to see our own biases and prejudices. It may challenge us to stop judging. It may actually help us as we endeavor to articulate what we really believe without rancor or disdain, but just so that they would know something about Christ our King. It is really clear that Jesus is a different kind of king. He is not so concerned about the public opinion of him. He certainly is not worried about political power. But he is King Jesus. And Paul makes it really clear in his letter to the Ephesians that for Paul, Jesus is far above the rule and authority and power and dominion, above every single name that is named. And the word power that he uses there is the Greek word dynamis, from which we get dynamite. And if you read through the rest of Ephesians, you realize that part of the power of this king is to break down dividing walls of hostility. That's what he talks about in all of chapter 2. And to reconcile, the power to reconcile human beings back to God. And the power, Paul says later, for us to live a life worthy of the calling, which means in part, and maybe the fullness of it, is to bear with one another in love. King Jesus, powerful King Jesus, but a different kind of king. King Jesus is also the one who opens the gates of heaven to the downtrodden, to those that are often on the fringes, to the least of these, and elevates then simple acts of compassion. They are very simple acts of service, feeding ministries, hospitality ministries, shelter ministries, visitation ministries, basic, mundane, nothing flashing, nothing heroic about these kind of activities. And don't we tend to think that the great Christ-centered people are the speakers and the writers and the healers and the miracle workers? They're the ones that are the major women and men of God. Dale Bruner, in his commentary, again says, these ministries are in reach of every one of us. Every single person has access to Christ through a needy person. Let me ask you, when's the last time you caught a glimpse of Jesus? Sometimes it requires us to look down to some of the downtrodden people, or at least to look across the table or the road or the tracks, the divide. Let me ask you this, where is your level of confidence in King Jesus? That he really will be the one who sorts out the evil from the good, that it's really in his hands. Is your confidence high enough to allow him to do the judging and to surrender your own right to be right? Mother Teresa once diagnosed the ills of our world by saying, we've just forgotten that we belong to each other, that each and every one of us is made in the image of God. I wonder, during Thanksgiving holidays, we went and saw the movie Wonder. By the way, if you haven't done it, this is a movie I can honestly say is worth going to see. It's about a boy named August. They call him Augie. He has Treacher-Collins syndrome. I didn't even know what that was. It affects the development of your facial bones and other facial tissues so that your face is incredibly deformed if you are one of these. And the story picks up when Augie has come to junior high age and his parents decide that he needs to go to school. Is there a time that you can think of that we're more blatant in our sorting than junior high and more hurtful about it? So his sister is also in high school, and the interesting part of the whole movie is, at least in my opinion, looking through this story, because this was on my mind, was this is not just a story about Augie. It's about the others, led mostly by these adolescents, pre-adolescents, who end up choosing, some are not kind at all, but others begin and stop sorting him out. They actually risk welcoming, risk eating at the lunch table with him, risk befriending him, risk sticking up for him when others are mean. And all of these are just small, incredibly significant acts of kindness. And all of them are change. It's a true story, and it's a wonder, really, what happens to everybody. Perhaps that's what Jesus had in mind when he told this story. To find the wonder in our own experience. Sometimes we have to look down or look across. Friends, it's Christ the King Sunday. I hope you've proclaimed that loudly and with all your heart. Because if there's any hope for this world, it's because Christ is our King, and this King is more powerful than any other King that ever was or is or will be, even when it doesn't look like it. His way is not the way of the kings that we're used to seeing, because his way is the way of downward mobility, as many people have said. And we're about to celebrate that as we move into Advent and towards Christmas. The miracle of the incarnation slips into the ordinary life of a child, Later on, the great wonder of the transfiguration fades away into the demon-possessed valley below. Christ the King is the hope of the world. And this is a king, we have a king, that is concerned about and seen in the least of these. What could you, what would you do this week to honor our King with your words and actions? Where will you look this week to see Christ the King? Remember now, Jesus said, when you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.